struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, this is Travis Johnson, the Nonprofit Architect, helping you build a stronger nonprofit. Hop on over to patreon.com/nonprofitarchitect, sign up for $5 a month and get access to behind the scenes, never before revealed content, and see how I meet people like Amanda behind the scenes and what we talk about before we actually set up a podcast. I have today with me Amanda Mehaffey, Director of Grants and Donor Engagement for LIFT, Living in Freedom Together. Amanda, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. Awesome. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience what you do for LIFT?
Awesome. So I am Director of Grants and Donor Engagement for LIFT, as you said, and we are located in Worcester, Massachusetts. We are a nonprofit organization that works with survivors of commercial sexual exploitation, so prostitution, human trafficking, things along that line. So our participants are survivors of the sex trade. We have a couple of different programs. One is our drop-in center, which is our flagship program. It's open 3 days a week now for a total of 18 hours a week. People that are still engaged in the life there can come in and access just basic needs, things like clothing, toiletries, stuff like that. They can also meet with our team and start to build connections. If they're interested in exiting the life or need treatment or medical care, our team is there for them to help them with those. In last October, we just opened our first residential program, which is first in the nation to use this model. It's a it's co-occurring enhanced. It's mental health and substance use disorder. So people that fit that criteria who have also had experience in the sex trade can come to this house, and they live there and they work with, they have a full care team that works with them on, you know, overcoming trauma and trying to get their lives, you know, back on track, any education they want to do, jobs, training, things like that. So those are kind of our two big programs. And we have a couple of other programs. One is creating alternatives to incarceration, in which we have paired with our local DA office to offer a pre-arraignment diversion program. So if somebody is arrested for prostitution in our city, rather than being arraigned on those charges, they are then referred to our program and they can meet with our outreach and advocacy specialists there. One of the big things for people to know about our organization is that we are survivor-led. We were founded by Nicole Bell, who's a survivor. We employ 25 people, and over 75% of them are survivors of the sex trade. So those are kind of some of the big things about us, and happy to be here and share a little bit more about us as we go through.
No, absolutely. It's really important what you're doing. I know there's some stigma to the sex trade, and there's also misinformation out there. You know, it's not like Pretty Woman, right? It's not like that at all. But you guys are doing a great job connecting with your community leaders and legislators, trying to decriminalize the actual act, but keep criminal the people running the behind the scenes. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so our organization works to implement the equality model, which has been adopted by several countries. Used to be called the Nordic model. Some people will recognize it as that. Started in sort of those Nordic countries, Sweden, things like that. So basically what it does is there's several parts of it, but the kind of the big hitters on it are, one is that it fully decriminalizes for, you know, the person who's selling sex. So in this case, more often than not women, but there are, you know, men who sell sex as well. So it decriminalizes it on the, like, for that person. And then, but it keeps in place laws for people who buy sex. So it recognizes that, you know, people who have involved in this, are involved in the sex trade, aren't there because they want to be there. They're there because of all sorts of different circumstances in their lives that have, you know, early childhood trauma, things like that, that have gotten them there. So it recognizes that these people don't need to be incarcerated. What they really need is high quality exit services. So part one of the equality model does that. Another part of it involves having those high quality exit services that are survivor led, because we recognize that that is best practice. And then also it keeps and or strengthens laws, depending on the country, what their laws look like, that, you know, persecute you know, people who buy sex and people who, you know, keep brothels or traffic people or pimping, things like that. Oftentimes people are profiting off of another person's suffering. And that's something that we really, you know, don't think should be happening. So those are kind of the big pieces there. And the big thing is also it's a multi-sector approach in bringing everybody in and really changing the community's opinion about prostitution and the sex trade. Because for so many people, they don't know much about it. So they assume it's like Pretty Woman, or they assume it's, you know, we should just legalize it and full decriminalization is the way to go. And once you really start to talk to people, they really start to understand kind of where we're coming from and why we've adopted this model.
Yeah. So you guys are struggling with that. They're really educating the public piece on one side, and on the other side, you're also trying to communicate your message and what you guys actually provide. So what are some of the avenues, what are some of the ways that you actually get those messages out?
Yeah, I think for one, it's been, you know, we've been around for about 6 years now. Just about 6 years. And for us, it's been just building and getting people to, you know, listen. And I think collaborating has been a huge part of that. I think we, you know, started with some low hanging fruit where we've just engaged community partners who were, you know, seeing these people, seeing people who had been involved in prostitution and had been working with them and really kind of already understood and may have been, you know, well receptive to the message. And it's really working with those people and training them on how to be champions, like arming them with this toolkit on, you know, these are the stats, these are the, you know, facts that you should really know. And, you know, sort of like when you, because there's always people that want to argue with you, right? That want to, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and how to have conversations with those people to really educate them. And so we've worked a lot with, you know, people in our community to help them become those champions of our cause. And I think we've been pretty successful at it so far. And obviously there's always more work to do, but I think so far we've done a pretty good job.
Right. Are you connecting with people via radio, television, social media, town halls, speaking at events? How do you actually deliver your message and connect with people?
Yeah, so a combination of all of the above, right? So we've been, you know, largely involved in our community. We do a lot of speaking engagements. Our CEO, or now some of our other outreach and advocacy teams, are out, you know, at local faith-based places. We're in different networking groups. We are on social media. We currently use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. And I think those are kind of our top four there. And then we also have our own website, and we do a lot of podcasts. Anybody that wants to let us talk about our organization, we're down to kind of keep spreading our message. We're also involved in a couple of sort of national organizations and working on getting involved in some global organizations. Our CEO and founder works closely with World Without Exploitation, which is a national organization, connects a lot of other survivor-led organizations together. So kind of getting that message out nationally. Our CEO last April spoke at the Women in the World Conference in New York, which is a big one. I know they had Oprah Winfrey was the keynote speaker. The panel that she was on, that our CEO was on, worked closely with John McCain's wife and a couple of other people on that panel. So it's been really great to kind of spread this message and talk with other leaders. Lately, we've been working closely with a lot of organizations that work closely with gender-based violence, and really kind of marketing our message as this is a form of gender-based violence. While yes, you know, both men and women can sell sex, predominantly it's women, and the buyers of sex are predominantly men. And so in that situation of like, we need to find equality here, and that this is a form of gender-based violence, and getting it involved in conversations like Me Too, and in, you know, working with organizations that do domestic violence work to kind of see, we should really be working together on this, and how can we work together to spread this message?
What kind of advice or words of encouragement would you give to nonprofits that haven't really started speaking to different organizations about what it is they do? They're not talking at lunchtime Rotary Club meetings. They're not speaking at conferences. They're not getting on a podcast. What kind of encouragement or direction would you offer those people?
I would say, I know it's scary, you know, to a lot of people hate public speaking. That's the one thing they really don't want to do, but it needs to be done. And it does get easier over time. You know, I had a great professor in college, and she always talked about mastering your elevator pitch. You know, it's like if you walked into, you know, the elevator, you were wearing a t-shirt that talked about your organization, somebody rides the elevator with you and they say, hey, tell me about whatever. So if I was wearing a Lyft t-shirt, say, hey, tell me about Lyft. I know I only have the time in that elevator ride to get them to buy into the message and, you know, really tell them about our organization, have them understand it. So, you know, what it's probably about 30 seconds that you have while you're at the elevator. So to kind of work on your pitches, whether you talk to somebody else, whether you do it in the mirror, just working, talking about your organization and, you know, your hot button. Like if I had 5 minutes, what would I say? If I had an hour, you know, what would I say? And just working on practicing that and maybe starting out in smaller groups and then working out to your big groups if it's something that's really scary for you.
I've heard the same kind of advice over time. You've got that 40-second elevator pitch. You got a 5 minute, can drop in at the, you know, drop of a hat and get something done. You've got the 10 to 15 minute, the 20 to 30 minute speech, the hour, and the 3 hour. And if you can get those points fine tuned down from the much larger avenues, or you can expand on the points from the much smaller, depending on where you're at in your speaking prowess. Those are the kind of things that really, really, really help a nonprofit connect to the donors, help spread their message. And not even just connecting to donors, right? Connecting to people that can help you connect. I'm sure if you are interested in this topic and you reach out to Amanda and she can't help you, she's going to be able to connect you to someone that can help you, give you some direction. Someone else in her field or her area of expertise, you know, you might be listening to this, say you're in Tampa and you're not in the region that Amanda directly impacts. She might help you find someone that you can connect with if you're interested in helping combat the sex trade and all those terrible things down in your area. Amanda might be a great point of contact, but you only get that is if you reach out and you talk to the people that you're looking to get answers from. People are somehow afraid to ask questions, and I don't know anyone that's looked down upon for actually asking those questions. Mm-hmm. You were telling me before our interview that you just held your annual report breakfast and you had something like 50 people there. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we had a really incredible year for our organization in 2019. Prior to 2019, we had been operating off a pretty small budget. We were really just making those initial connections. And in 2019, it really seemed like a lot of the puzzle pieces came together. We got some support from the Novo Foundation, which does a lot of work with, you know, gender-based violence and women's initiatives based out of New York City. And, you know, they helped us with a startup grant, which really just acted as a catalyst in being able to do everything that we've done. Like we launched that Katie program I was talking about earlier in the show. We launched that in June. We renovated an entire three-decker to, you know, create our Donna's Place program. And so we came to the end and we looked at all the work we had done and we're like, wow, we really need to celebrate this and see, you know, show our donors this is what we've done with like all the funds and all you've been able to support us with. And also we use it as an opportunity to unveil a new initiative that we're working on, which I can tell you a little bit about. But we were like, okay, how can we get everybody in the room, but also say, we still need you. You know, like this has been incredible. We've done a lot of, you know, great work, but we still need you to really push this mission forward and really take us to the next step. And also kind of gave them some very specific asks on like what they can do to stay involved and what next steps are. So the annual report breakfast, we had it just a couple of days ago. And so we had over 50 people from different sectors, different supporters. So the guest list there was some people from local community foundations. We had a couple of state senators in the room. And we had, you know, our local fire chief was there and a lot of different, you know, community partners who have been involved with us over the last, you know, years and year kind of came together and we said, you know, here's our report. We did, the event was about 2 hours long. We started at 9. We offered people breakfast. Event started about 9:30. We did a presentation of our annual report, and then we rolled out our new initiative. So new initiative, we titled Empowered to End It. So as I mentioned a little bit about the equality model, the Empowered to End It is about implementing the equality model in our city and also building that as a model that can then be replicated throughout the country. So we separated people into different sectors. In the presentation, we talked about the different sectors. So like what the business community can do to impact the sex trade is different than what the healthcare community can do and is different from what, you know, the education community can do. And so we gave them very specific things that they can help. We gave them a little bit of context about our initiative and just kind of the scope of the problem in our area. While yes, we have a lot of, you know, street level prostitution, like most places, we have a lot of online ads going on. So we kind of gave a little bit of a picture on how many ads were, and some, I think people were shocked to see how much was actually happening in the city of Worcester. People think it's kind of, you know, not that big of a problem. And so we were able to really show people and say also, hey, this is best practices and this is what we're going to do to stop it. And I think that was really powerful. We received some feedback and it's been all positive so far. So now it's about just capitalizing on momentum. We've already been, you know, in touch with the thank you for people to kind of thank them for being there. And this week we're sending out some more information on follow-up meetings with different sector leaders and to really keep people engaged.
If you're listening out there, I don't know if you caught just how much value is in that last little few minutes. Just to recap, Amanda went through and talked about her annual report breakfast. She took a two-hour chunk. She fed them, which is always important. She laid out what they have done as an organization, aka you're telling the donors what you're using their money for. You're showing and proving to them that you're just not stealing their money. Right? If you donate the money, we're going to do these things, and this is what we're doing. This is the impact that we're having. And then this is a big one. This next one is key. And a lot of young nonprofits really, really, really hate this part because it's the part where you say that we still need the donors. We still need your support. You're not going to do one fundraiser and eradicate the problem you've not dedicated your life to, right? You're going to need ongoing, continued support. You're going to need to build on what you have. And they laid that out in their presentation. They also said how you can help. They told the legislature, businesses, healthcare, and education sectors of the population what they can do specifically to help advance their cause. I see time and again where nonprofits go up and they get a little media time and they hop on TV and they say all the great things that they're doing. And they don't say they still need money and they don't ask for volunteers and they don't ask for exposure and say, oh, hey, what can we do for you? And they come up with nothing, like they don't need continued support. That is your time. That is your time to have the most reach, the most impact, and let people know what it is you're doing and how they can jump on board the train. They also rolled out a new program and laid out the things that they would do with new monies and new initiatives and what the vision of Lyft is going to look like in the future. And then they followed it up with a thank you. And if you've never really gotten into the nitty-gritty of fundraising before, if the last time you talked to them, you didn't say thank you, then you're not allowed to ask for money until you've said thank you. I mean, that is just world-class right there. And I know you do a lot of the event planning around there, so I'm sure this was, if not all, definitely mostly you. What advice would you have to someone that is looking to set up their own event?
I think definitely giving yourself enough time to plan events and getting your, you know, you have to find a venue, obviously, and there's like a lot of those, you know, nitty-gritty things. I think it's a lot about figuring out who the key players you want in the room are first. So for us, you know, whenever we're planning an event, we're very, you know, fortunate to have the support of a lot of local, you know, leaders and legislators. A lot of those people have schedulers. So it's best to reach out to them early if there's a date that you're considering. Just see if that's something that, you know, works for them. And if that's somebody you really want in the room as a speaker or just to be there and show support just by being in attendance. So it's best to get those out to people early, get that on their calendar, get it saved. And then you can always, at that point, you can always change your date if you find that it doesn't work for them. You're not locked into a venue already. You're not locked into a time. You may find as you're starting to plan an event that there's another big event happening on that day for another organization that may, you know, people that support you may also support this organization. So you want to make sure you're not competing for the same people. And also you want to be able to, if there's other organizations that are supporting your events, you should really be supporting their events. And I think that it encourages people to show up. If you're showing up to their event, they're more likely to attend your event. So I think it's, you know, great to be just good neighborship, I guess, is the word I'm inventing right now. So I think planning events, giving yourself enough time, really, you know, taking it slow, looking through your details, not being afraid to ask for help. We have a fundraising committee who does, you know, a lot of work in planning events. This year we're having a fundraiser, you know, this year and last year's fundraiser, you know, having a committee to sell, hey, did you think of this thing? Don't forget to do that. Laying out a plan for this is what we need to do 3 months out. This is what we need to do 8 weeks out. This is what we need to do a month out. And I'm big on, you know, using technology to help you in any way you can, you know, whether it's, you know, Eventbrite to help you sell tickets, if it's something like that, or, you know, just sharing it on social media and sharing it more frequently, you know, asking people around you to go onto your page and share that thing so it gets the reach out there. I think those are some of the big things with event planning, and also not sweating the small stuff. If there's anything I've learned through doing events, it's things are going to change, you know, in the days leading up to it. You know, the event may not go exactly as planned, but I think if you come in, you know, planning for things to change and just willing to kind of go with the flow and make it a great event either way, I think it'll be successful.
Yeah, expectation management is key.
Yeah.
Because the person you thought that was going to be there, they don't show up. Your keynote speaker has a flat tire. Mm-hmm. You have storms and you've got much less people that showed up than you had planned for. All of these things need to be taken into consideration. And what I really, really like is a few of the key people that you had invited. Every really, I mean, like truly successful fundraiser I've been to has included the media and state legislature, state and federal legislature. Mm-hmm. You have key people that get bought into your mission that are willing to share, promote, or even connect you with the right people. You're one person away from having that exposure, that next step, that huge boom in whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. But if you don't invite the people that are leaders in what they do, then it doesn't matter what kind of program you have put together, because you're not having the right people in the room. Mm-hmm. So what do you want Lyft to look like in the next 5 years?
Next 5 years, I mean, we're really growing as an organization right now. I'd really like to see, you know, this Empowered to End It program, you know, making a lot of change in our community. I'd love to see the way that we look at prostitution in Worcester to really change from this idea of like, we need to, you know, handle this problem of, you know, these women on our streets, into a thing like we need to offer these women help and we need to hold the people that are, you know, buying sex with them accountable. So I'd like to see, you know, that kind of change. I think we're moving in the right direction, but I'd like to see, you know, arrests change. So we've worked a lot on, you know, having women not be arrested for prostitution, but I'd also like to see, you know, arrests for buyers go up. And I'd like to see the way that our community, you know, reacts to situations like that change. And I'd like to see a big change in kind of the opinion about it. And I think a lot of that's just getting the information out there. And I think Empowered to End is a great start to that. So in 5 years, you know, hopefully we'll be doing a lot more work on that. I'm a realist. I don't think we'll end this problem in 5 years, you know, but I think we can make a lot of progress on, you know, legislation and pushing things forward. And, you know, I hope that our right now, our drop-in center, just within the last couple of weeks, has expanded to be open 3 days a week. Before, we were only open 2 days a week with, I think, a total of 8 hours between the 2 days. Now, we're open 18 hours a week. I'd love to see that be a full-time 9-to-5. I'd like to see more outreach being done. I'd like to see us doing more, you know, street outreach and maybe even some online outreach and some outreach to youth and things like that. But, you know, those things take time. And I think as an organization, you know, as we grow, those are some stuff we're going to look into. But hopefully it's just, you know, another 4 years or 5 years of us making as much growth as we did in 2019. If we can, you know, kind of keep that momentum going, I think we can do a lot of good.
How can we help you?
I think this has been super helpful already. And I think, you know, just keeping connected with nonprofits and keeping connected with our work. So for our organization, you know, like we said, everyone's kind of afraid to ask for money. You know, every organization needs support, whether that's, you know, financially, whether that's with expertise, whether that's just helping to, you know, we're on social media. If you want to get on and like our pages and kind of just follow us for some content, that's always helpful. And, you know, sharing our things, just get our message out there. And really, I think people can educate themselves about the sex trade and, you know, help to kind of hopefully they'll understand our mission. So that way, if they hear somebody in the community say, oh yeah, they should just legalize it, they might be like, oh, hey, no, I listened to this podcast the other day and I learned about why that wasn't a good thing. You know, so just like, I think if anything, you know, people, if they want to donate to our organization, they're more than, you know, we love that, but also spreading our mission and just being a champion for our organization and helping out nonprofits in general. It'd be great.
You heard it here, folks. Money in shares. Money in shares. Where can people get a hold of you? What's the absolute best place for them to find you?
So we are on Facebook as Living in Freedom Together. We also have our website is Lift, L-I-F-T, Worcester, which I'll spell for people since I know in other parts of the country they won't understand. So it's W-O-R-C-E-S-T-E-R. So for Worcester or Worcester, if you're not from Massachusetts, .org. So we have a ton of information on there about, you know, upcoming events, ways to stay involved, and ways. There's also some contact us information as well if people want to get involved in our organization.
Fantastic, man. Thanks so much for being on the show today. And if you like what you hear, hop over to patreon.com/nonprofitarchitect and give us a little support. Thanks a lot, Amanda.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.